Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Alpek's second quarter 2015 earnings conference call. With us this morning from Alpek, we have Eduardo Escalante, CFO, and Hernan Lozano, Head of Investor Relations, who will discuss the company's performance and answer any questions that you might have. As a reminder, today's conference is being recorded and will be available on the company's website, www.alpek.com. I will now hand the call over to Mr. Lozano. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good morning and welcome. We very much appreciate everyone's participation. The plan for today is to provide an overview of second quarter results as well as the latest industry developments and open up for a Q&A session afterwards. Before we get started, let me remind you that information discussed on today's call may include forward-looking statements regarding the company's future financial performance and prospects, which are subject to risks and uncertainties. Actual results may differ materially, and the company cautions not to place undue reliance on these forward-looking statements. Alpek undertakes no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statements, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise. I will now turn the call over to Mr. Eduardo Escalante.
Thank you, Hernan. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. Our results reflect the positive industry developments that we have highlighted last quarter and a favorable pricing environment. Oil and feedstock prices continue to recover after our previous call. The average Brent crude oil price was $62 per barrel during the second quarter, compared to a $54 average in the first quarter. As you may recall, our 2015 guidance was based on an average of $56 per barrel Brent price. In this context, consolidated second Q15 net sales totaled $1.4 billion, down 13% year-on-year, but up 6% quarter-on-quarter as a result of the high correlation between our feedstock prices and the top line. In contrast, this quarter's $195 million consolidated EBITDA was driven by higher margins in polyester and plastics and chemicals. I will provide more insights on our two business segments later in the call. Second quarter 15 EBITDA also includes a $22 million non-cash inventory revaluation benefit, resulting mainly from a 20% increase in the U.S. paraxylene contract price between March and June of this year. Adjusting for inventory valuation and the $26 million one-time profit recorded in the first quarter, we get a comparable consolidated EBITDA of $173 million for second quarter 15 versus $124 million for second quarter 14 and $131 million for first quarter of this year. We believe that comparable consolidated EBITDA should be taken into consideration, especially at times when inventory valuation or other extraordinary items have a significant impact. Year to date, EBITDA reached $332 million, up 44%, and comparable consolidated EBITDA totaled $304 million, up 21% when compared to the same period of 2014. Majority net income was $83 million during this quarter, 108% higher than second quarter 14, driven by the improvement in operating results. Year to date, majority net income increased 69% when compared to the same period last year, also as a result of higher operating income. Before moving on to our business segments and investment projects, I would like to comment briefly on net debt and some cash flow items. Net debt totaled $782 million at the close of the second quarter, up 9% or $68 million since December 2014. Gross debt increased less than 1% over the same period, and cash flow generation has partially offset $138 million paid in consolidated dividends and $114 million in CapEx. As a result, Alpek leverage and interest coverage ratios stand at healthy levels of 1.5 and 8.6 times respectively. The majority of this year's CapEx has been dedicated to strategic projects such as the EPS operations acquired from BASF, the Corpus Christi PTA PET site, and the Huntsman monoethylene glycol tolling agreement, among others. On a consolidated basis, Alpek and its subsidiaries have paid $138 million in cash dividends year-to-date. This figure includes the $95 million 2015 cash dividend paid to our shareholders in April. Regarding our business segments, it has been encouraging to see favorable industry developments and a strong demand across all our product portfolio. Our polyester segments, second quarter 15 EBITDA grew 48% year on year, reaching $135 million, boosted by higher margins and a $26 million inventory revaluation credit. Adjusting for inventory valuation, comparable polyester EBITDA increased 22% year on year to $109 million in the second quarter. One of the fundamental drivers behind this quarter's EBITDA growth was the $66 per ton increase to the North America PTA price formula. This adjustment came into effect on April the 1st and is expected to provide a $40 million estimated benefit this year. Additionally, a strong seasonal PET demand in the NAFTA region supported better than expected polyester volume growth. However, this is not entirely reflected in our second quarter volume figures due to an increase in Alpek's intercompany PTA volume. In other words, the amount of our own PTA that we use for our own PET production grew in recent months. Adjusting for this effect, second quarter 15 polyester volume was 2% higher year on year compared to a reported 4% decrease. Yet, the benefit from the incremental margin associated with higher PTA-PET integration is fully captured in our polyester EBITDA this quarter. Margins of polyester exports also improved during the second quarter. Reference Asian PTA margins increased following two major unplanned shutdowns in China during March and April. According to publicly available information, both of these facilities remain offline. Moreover, a few weeks ago, China's two largest PTA producers announced plans to cut their operation rates to 80% starting this month. This initiative would take out of the market nearly 2 million tons of PTA, on top of the 7 to 8 million tons from the aforementioned unplanned shutdowns. The sustained ramp-up of our Cosoleacaque cogeneration facility also contributed to polyester EBITDA growth in the second quarter. Cogeneration EBITDA increased 50% quarter-on-quarter to $4 million. Lastly, as you may recall, petitions for anti-dumping and countervailing duties on packaging-grade PET resin were filed in March before the U.S. Department of Commerce and the U.S. International Trade Commission. There has been no news since the unanimous preliminary determination announced by the International Trade Commission in April. Preliminary determinations from the Department of Commerce are expected during the third quarter. Moving on, our plastics and chemical segments continue to benefit from better than expected polypropylene and EPS margins. Second quarter 15 EBITDA increased 82% year on year to $60 million, including a $4 million inventory devaluation charge. Adjusting for inventory devaluation, comparable plastics and chemicals EBITDA was up 94% year on year during the second quarter. Polypropylene has been the main driver of plastics and chemicals EBITDA growth throughout the first half of the year. Margins have expanded month to month, supported by a strong demand and falling feedstock prices. As a reference, the U.S. polypropylene contract price is 40% lower year-on-year, reflecting lower oil prices and the region's propane surplus. Similarly, EPS margins have been better than expected year-to-date as a result of favorable industry dynamics. This was the first quarter that we report under a restructured plastics and chemicals segment, which now includes a larger, wholly owned EPS business under the name of Styropek, with no exposure to polyurethanes. We are very excited by the prospects of Styropek after the first 3 months of fully integrated operations. The incremental EPS business more than offsets the foregone polyurethane EBITDA contribution. Improving caprolactam performance also contributed to this quarter's plastics and chemicals EBITDA growth. As you may recall, results were impacted in second quarter 14 by a month-long shutdown associated with the technology upgrade of our plant. Our caprolactam business is now benefiting from the project savings as well as gradual recovery of Asian reference margins. Let me provide a brief update of our key investments as we continue to implement the vertical integration and operating efficiency projects included in our CapEx program. The Corpus Christi PTA PET site is advancing as planned, with critical equipment shipments being received. The Huntsman MEG tolling agreement is also progressing as planned and is on a schedule for a startup in fourth quarter 2015. Regarding the Altamira cogeneration plant, we are reviewing certain technical aspects of the project in light of a potentially better setup. Our analysis could result in a lower investment or a higher output. Although this was not considered in the project's original timeline, we believe it is in our shareholders' best interest to postpone implementation for a very short amount of time while we assess this alternative. Construction is still expected to begin before year end. Lastly, we continue to engage Pemex regarding our MEG integration project in Mexico. However, we have no new developments to report since our previous conference call. I would like to wrap up the call with a few comments on our announcement this morning regarding guidance. We increased our 2015 EBITDA guidance by 17% to $585 million, based on better-than-expected year-to-date results and our view going forward. Compared to our original guidance, this new figure implies a $134 million increment that is partially offset by the $49 million lower one-time profit from the sale of our polyurethane business. The adjustment to the North America PTA price formula, the better-than-expected polypropylene and EPS margins, and a favorable oil price environment are among the most important drivers behind this new number. This concludes my remarks, and now I would like to open the call for questions. Operator, please instruct the participants on how to place their questions.
Certainly. Ladies and gentlemen, to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad at this time. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure that your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, that is star 1 to ask a question. And we'll take our first question from Luis Carvalho with HSBC.
Hello, everyone. Hernan, Eduardo. Maybe I have two questions here. The first one, we did see a relevant shutdown capacity in China on the PTA business over the past 2 quarters. I just would like to understand you. I mean, 4.5 of them were about accident in a plant area. How recurring do you expect to be the margins looking forward on the PTA business? And second question, you mentioned about this 17% guidance increase for EBITDA of this year, and you mentioned some of the arguments for that, the PTA margins, the oil price environment. Could you provide us the breakdown between each of these topics to actually reach the 585? Thank you very much.
Sure, Luis. Good morning, and thank you for your questions. Let me address first the China PTA capacity and the margins going forward. The reference Asian polyester margins for PTA in particular increased significantly since May. We think the drivers behind this increase were the three factors that we have discussed: the bankruptcy of a large 3.2 million tons producer in March, and then in April we had the major shutdown due to a large fire at a paraxylene facility that is integrated with a large 4.5 million tons PTA plant. And now in June, as we mentioned before, China's two largest PTA producers announced plans to reduce to 80% their operating rates. Third factor alone represents a reduction of about $2 million tons per year of PTA in China. So all in all, the three events that happened in the last 4 months represent around 10 million tons of PTA capacity of the market. That is more than what China capacity, PTA capacity, is expected to grow this year, which is about, according to industry analysts, is about 7 million tons. So we think the capacity surplus in China is moving in the right direction, certainly. We hope that these elements, like the ones that happened these last few months, will continue supporting better margins. I would say there are some uncertainty factors, like the, of course, the oil prices, the volatility of oil prices now, as well as the decreases in the China's stock exchange in the last few weeks also affected some commodity prices in China. So we really have to wait and see for the remainder of the year, but still I would say that signs are encouraging for PTA margins in China. Regarding the EBITDA guidance, you're right, we provided a guidance of $585 million EBITDA revised guidance. If you compare that with the $500 million that we had as the guidance before, I think it's important to consider first and foremost that the $500 million included $75 million of the sale of the polyurethane business to BASF. So actually, the core EBITDA from operations without extraordinary items in our previous guidance was 425. Now, in the case of the revised guidance that we provided this morning of 585, we are including, of course, the $26 million already recognized in the first quarter from this sale of the polyurethane business. So really, the increase, let me call it from comparable EBITDA from operations, is from 425 to 559, or an increase of $134 million. The main drivers behind this increase, of course, one of them is the PPA formula price increase from April 1st, which, like I mentioned before, will provide us during the year $40 million benefit. We also have had and expect to continue having significant operational efficiencies and other savings in polyester and some of our plastics and chemical businesses. We also have increased margins in polypropylene and EPS. So our plastics and chemicals division have been showing positive results from these two large products. And in addition to that, you also have to consider that we have had higher oil prices during the second quarter in particular than what we consider in the guidance, in the original guidance. The original guidance consider $56 per barrel for Brent oil prices, and the actual number for the second quarter was $62 per barrel. So all together, I would say these are the main drivers behind the increase of EBITDA guidance to $585 million.
Okay, thank you. That's very clear. Just if I may, a follow up. Any update about the energy project debottleneck? Thank you.
Energy project with Pemex.
Yeah, sure. As you know, Pemex is going through a legal restructuring of their entities. They are going to create. They made the official announcement that they are going to create a new ethylene business within Pemex. So we are working together with the people responsible of the old Pemex businesses, and we are looking forward in probably next month to start working with the new people after they are named by their board. The people responsible of these new entities. In the meantime, we are working together with Pemex on how to solve the restrictions that they have for cash available for capex. We are working together with them in valuing some of Pemex current assets that they can contribute to the project as part of their equity contribution instead of cash. So that may drive a revision of the scope of the project that we are currently discussing with them. So all in all, I would say we are navigating through these new developments in Pemex, but hopefully we are still confident that we will be able to reach an agreement and present this project to our board and to Pemex board before the end of the year for their approval to move on. I think the most important part is that considering the current oil price levels and the expected price levels for the future, the project is still a very good project for both companies.
That's very helpful. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Lillian Stark with Morgan Stanley.
Hi, good morning, and congratulations on the strong results. I have three questions. The first one is if you could provide some color in terms of in the North American polyester volumes, the 2% year-on-year growth, whether that, I mean, that was perceived with a bit of weakness, if you expect volumes to start increasing as the oil price has stabilized. The second question is, pricing in North America in polyester appears to be above the import parity to Asia. To what extent do you think the ongoing anti-dumping case could be offsetting any Asian imports into the North American market? And then the third question is, if you were to isolate the margins from Latin American, or rather from sales to any other market outside of North America, what would have been the improvement on the polyester margins?
Sure. Thank you, Lillian. Thank you for your questions. Polyester volume in North America is quite strong. Market demand is very robust. In particular, this time of the year, where we are going into the high summer season, when you consider the volume we sold in the second quarter, some segments, some market segments have been decreasing a little bit or staying flat, like carbonated soft drinks, for example. But some other market segments are growing significantly. Water sales, for example, is growing at a fantastic pace in North America. Some other specialty drinks, like vitamin water, like some fruit juices, coconut juices, and what have you, they are also growing at a very rapid pace. So all in all, demand is quite strong, and that has driven our volume in North America. Now, if you look at our sales volume for polyester during the second quarter, what happened is we increased our intercompany PTA volume. That means we sold more of our own PTA production within our company to our sister companies in order to sustain this volume growth. Just to give you an idea, when you compare the second quarter of 2015 versus the first quarter of this same year, the volume growth was 2%. If you see what we reported, but if you take into account the intercompany sales The volume growth was 7%. So again, there is a very significant intercompany sales that, by the way, we do expect that to continue going forward. Regarding the import parity for polyester in North America, you have to remember that North America has some import barriers that allow to have higher margins for polyester products than other regions of the world. Not only the import duties represent a significant amount, but also the logistics costs to reach North America, in particular the East Coast from Asia and some other regions, are very significant. So margins have been holding up in North America. The pressure from Asian reference margins affect us more, as you mentioned, in our export volumes. In that case, the sales, in particular of PTA that we do to Europe and South America, in those cases, we do have to go against those lower margins. But as we have mentioned before, those margins, in particular for PTA, have been improving since March, which also helped our export margins. Now, regarding our export sales, our margins are much lower in the exports because of these factors that I just mentioned than in our domestic North America market. But they are still good markets for us. We have margins of $10 to $20 per ton from those exports. And we export, incremental margins. Now, we export about 25 to 30% of our volume to South America and Europe. So by far, the most important segments are in our domestic markets in North America.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much for the response.
And next, we'll take a question from Diego Mendez with Itaú.
Yes, guys, good morning. Thank you for taking my question. So my first question, it's actually if you could provide us a little bit more details on the planned polyester plant shutdown the fourth quarter. You mentioned that this is going to impact the EBITDA, so trying to understand what the impact could be on the EBITDA of the fourth quarter. And now, so the second question is related to the EPS assets from BASF. If you could tell us if everything is in line with your expectations, or if there is room for additional upsides or challenges that you might face that you have not anticipated that may impact the results going forward. Thank you.
Yeah, regarding the shutdowns, Diego, first of all, these are all planned shutdowns. We do a schedule regularly a shutdown of several of our plants or of our PTA plants for the last quarter of the year, taking advantage of the lower seasonality months that we have during the year. We will have a shutdown at a couple of plants, one in the U.S., one in Mexico. They are not very long shutdowns, depending on the plant. They are between 1 week and two and a half weeks. And we do not expect to have any significant impact on our volume sales from what we would sell normally if we don't shut down those plants. So we are not worried about that. Again, these are very much on a schedule every year. Now, regarding the integration of EPS, the EPS business that we acquired from BASF, integration has been completed. We took over the business both in the U.S. and Canada, as well as in South America, with plants in Brazil, Argentina, and Chile on April 1st. We are running those businesses, those plants, and those businesses now, and things are going very well. In particular, in North America, things are going much better than what we expected. Market in the U.S. is quite strong, from EPS going to construction applications. And in Mexico, starting in July, we are going into the high season of the maquila industry, which is a very good market for us, since many of the appliances and electrodomestics that are built in Mexico for exports by the maquila industry use EPS in their packaging. So we are confident that these businesses will continue to grow. In the case of South America, the opportunity we see is we have expanded significantly the business in Mexico in particular, so we are planning on taking those experiences from Mexico to the South America region and start increasing the size of those operations. The businesses are all profitable, which I think is very good news. And as I mentioned before at the beginning of the call, the EBITDA from EPS is not only offsetting the EBITDA that we lost with the sale of the polyurethane business to BASF, but is growing. It's on a positive trend.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
We'll take our next question from Felipe Santos with J.P. Morgan.
Hey guys, good morning. Thanks so much for the call. Just one quick question. In your recent guidance that just released, is there any inventory gains that you consider going forward, looking for the prices? And how would you think that this would be evolving in terms of the price evolution to the end of this year, considering that the spreads are high now and some people expecting them to decrease a bit? So if you could speak a little bit further about the pricing environment. Thanks so much.
Hello, this is Hernan. Could you repeat the first part of your question, please?
Yes. Hi, Hernan. It's just like just wondering if you have in this guidance, the $585 million released, how much is there any consideration in terms of inventory gains inside it? What would be the main composition of the numbers if you can open?
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Felipe. No, the $585 million EBITDA guidance that we provided this morning does not include any inventory adjustments, nor does it include any other extraordinary items. Any effect on inventories or extraordinary items will be in addition to this 585. This is just the regular operations that we expect to have for the second half.
Okay, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, star one at this time for any questions. We'll take our next question from Fernando Perez with GBM.
Good morning. Congratulations on the results. I have two questions. On your original guidance, you have $75 million regarding the BAS world transaction. And what's your expectation regarding the remainder $50 million that you haven't passed through results? And the second question is regarding the Altamira cogeneration plant. I was wondering if you could give me some update on the status, please. Thank you.
Certainly, and thank you for your questions, Fernando. The original guidance included $75 million, of which $26 million were already recognized in the first year. Now, for the rest, as you mentioned, the other $50 million, let me give you a little bit of context. What happened is, originally, the deal was structured to be an outright sale of assets for the whole deal. At the end, the way the deal was structured, it was an asset sale for part of the deal and also a capacity reservation for some of the polyurethane business. The asset sale portion of the deal was already recognized, and that's where the $26 million profit comes from. For the capacity reservation side, we are still working on the definition of how much of that we can recognize this year and how much of that has to be recognized within during the time of the deal, which is 10 years, okay? For the time being, working with our external auditors, we decided not to recognize any part of the $50 million, but are still working with them on their analysis to define how much, if any, we could recognize. We decided not to include any part of the $50 million in the EBITDA guidance that we provided this morning, since there is no certainty if and when we'll be able to recognize any amount. Regarding the Altamira cogeneration project, I mentioned before that we are reviewing the project. Really, during the last couple of months, some better alternatives for the setup of the cogeneration facility came to light, and we decided to take a deep analysis into those alternatives. The plant was originally designed to be a 300 megawatts plant. Now we are looking at some numbers that are going to be probably just a little north of that, between 5 and 10% north of that, but with what we hope will be a lower invested amount for the whole facility. So we think at the end of the road, it is going to be a much better alternative than what we have today. And I think the very good news about this is not only is going to be a larger plant and a lower investment, but we do expect to begin construction this year, as we were before. There's going to be a little bit of a delay, but it still will begin construction in 2015. Today, we have started the contractor selection process already for the new setup of the plant. And finally, we have not moved the startup date for the project, which is still expected to be at the fourth quarter of 2017.
Thank you very much for your answer.
You're welcome.
With no questions in the queue, I'd like to turn the conference back over to Mr. Lozano for any additional or closing remarks.
Yes, I would just like to thank everyone for participating in today's call. And please feel free to contact us if you have any follow-up questions or comments. Have a nice day.
And ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude today's conference. Thank you all for joining.